act as a critical friend to this particular issue, because it's constant. I don't sense we are making progress which we can tangibly go, we have improved significantly and we now do this better. We have had an annual issue, and whilst I recognise some of the issues we have, where something doesn't quite come through, particularly with the developer 106 money, but there's a lot of capital projects there that probably we should be more strongly influencing. And I have to say, my life in a previous council, the issue was very similar until we wrestled with it very hard to tighten up significantly on the way capital projects came to the table and got onto the sheet, so to speak. I rest sort of my comments on there and pass over to other members. Councillor Shepherd, I think you had your...
Oh yeah, thank you. That word assurance again, I mean, I'm just wondering, based on our experience over the past few years, what degree of confidence we can have in assurances from any unnamed contractors that they can actually deliver what they say they'll deliver in the time they state. Hasn't experience shown that they may take on work, quite bluntly, and then actually have problems getting the labour to do it?
I don't think that's true. I think it's very true, but I also think what the Chair has said is true. One way or another, we do have to get smarter. Mm. I'm not saying that it's going to be perfect next year, but I think over a couple of years, the way that we've project managed the work and the time expectations can be tightened up. I don't think it's a question of there's not a will to do the work. The work will get carried out. It is literally a question of when will it get carried out. Some of the money in there on the Section 106 and has been in there for years and years, mainly because we're waiting for parish councils, and the Chair has alluded to that. But I don't think it's an unfair comment to say that we could be. I think that the various directors responsible for it probably do need to be more accurate in predicting when the work will be done, and given the fact that they've got every quarter they can add or take something out of the capital plan or move it forward, there is every opportunity for them to know whether this is going to happen by the year end, when we get to when we get to December. Is it really going to happen by the 31st of March? Do we need to be putting a capital plan amendment forward to move it forward? And there is also a report available, which I believe you've been provided with, Chair, which shows all the schemes and how long they've been in the capital plan. And in fairness, most of them have been there from 17, 18 or later. There are some back to 15, 16.
14, 15, as I look
Yeah, which will probably be one of the Section 106 ones, a report there. But I think it's a fair comment. I don't, you know, again, I think it's a strategic overview. I think it is valid to try and get it better, and I don't think anybody could criticise you for saying that. But I think the substantial assurance is that, one, we're not losing money, two, these projects will be carried out, three, it's a question of getting it more accurate in terms of time of when we put it in and out of the capital plan. But can I predict the future? Can I tell you that the contractors are going to promise things and deliver them? Almost certainly not. Certainly, previous experience would say that there is a shortage of labour in the construction industry. There is a shortage of skill shortage. We've employed some of the biggest contractors in the country, and it's not always worked out exactly as we thought. But the procurement process and everything else has been gone through. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that yes, it'll be all right next year, because they will do exactly what they say, because past history has dictated they have done anything but what they said they were going to do.
Can I just mention one thing? We will be setting a new capital plan, and it's a 3-year capital plan. So obviously this year, that's at a time that we'd perhaps want to sort of scrutinise that, maybe in terms of looking at it here. But obviously with the 3-year capital plan that's set, that's at a time where obviously the schemes are sort of brought forward. So is 3 years too long? That's just a question that perhaps we need to look at when we actually do the capital programme, put that forward together, because 3 years might be too long in terms of, you know, sort of like the whole plan process.
I suppose in honesty we've got to have ambitions of what we're going to achieve in the capital plan. It's just a question of the time, probably 3 years. I mean, it isn't a huge capital plan. It is quite large on the HRA, but it is very difficult. I think we are duty bound to have it for 3 years. I mean, I bow to your knowledge, but at least it gives members some idea, and also the directorates can bid to put things into the capital plan, because there is a process they go through to get them in there. All the people submit bids for the capital, which is limited, so they're assessed and put forward and evaluated well before, you know, to get in there in the first place, they have to go through a process.
Okay, just quickly, any more for Councillor Barker before he departs? Thank you very much for your time tonight, Greg.
Thank
you. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. Run, Tom, while you can.
I'll so, get drilling somewhere else now.
Yeah. See you later.
We are asked to note this again, to note this plan, to note the capital outturn tonight. I would like and hope that we collectively can work towards being able to do this job better and encourage, be a better critical friend to the Cabinet, to the capital plan in future, such that we can not be sitting here going, it is what it is, and it's not our fault, which is not any blame to individuals. But that's the sense I have. I personally have sat in rooms for a number of years and continually got major capital underspend and not seen the difference of being able to drive a process to drive that change. So I think we note it tonight if members are happy with that. And then it's incumbent on us to assist Cabinet in doing better. It is as best as I can phrase it.
Can I just ask, how often will we get this? Because I'm aware, with my Shepshed head on, that here it's saying that we've still got 19,500. Well, we've now nearly spent all that because it's gone through. So the situation might not be quite as bad as it looks. So what I'm asking, Chairman, is how often will we have this to look at? Because if we're only going to get it, say, once a year at the end of the finance year, we're not really going to be able to keep an eye on it, are we? Or that's going to be on the...
I think two things I would comment. One is I believe this is the annual outturn report.
Yes.
But the capital plan amendment arrives quarterly.
Yes, I think we've done... I've just got the dates are in, actually, Appendix 2, which records. So we have done some in... One in December and one in March, actually.
Those are monitoring opportunities. However, I would suggest we, as other committees and as other scrutiny panels are trying, we've got to be careful not to click it back onto the agenda because we just tick box. We've got to know that if it's coming back to us, there's a very clear purpose. And it may be that it is just a flagged exercise. Traffic light, red, amber, green, and we are able to focus on a couple of points. But again, we have this 3 month window to work through some of these issues, and hopefully we might have 4 years together. But I can only work meeting to meeting is my life in this chair, and hence we can work on that through to the next meeting and see where we can.
The reason I asked that, because, and I'm probably going to be a bit specific, I had a meeting with an officer and they said, well, there's no money left in the capital plan for a small project that I was interested in, but when you look at this, there is. So, you know, it just seems a shame that if you want something doing, but because it wasn't in it, do you know what I mean? But there is money here not being spent.
As an outside person to local authorities, my organisation or organisations know that authorities have underspent at key times of the year, and that's when certain projects suddenly start getting released and done.
Yeah.
But how we do that internally within this environment for my remit here, but I share that we know there's underspend, but we can't get something onto the agenda or into that plan. But that's again, you know, for us to work on, I guess.
Right, okay.
In that regard. Any other issues from members? Otherwise, we know item 7. Thank you. I'm going to ask us to just move the agenda to go to item 9 now, with other members and other officers here. If we can address item 9 and come back to 8, which I know we need a bit of discussion and 10 amongst ourselves. So I'm going to ask if we can move the meeting to item 9 if members are happy. I'm not sure who is introducing item 9.
It's a question of how you would like to do it, Chair. Traditionally, traditionally there is a focus on the red indicators that have been identified, and the lead member and officer are invited to come up and look at those on the case by case basis. So
far be it from me to break the tradition, Mr. Jackson. You know that wouldn't be my demeanour. Are members happy that for this meeting we continue in the vein that we have, whilst we understand that we are going away to work very hard on how we manage our work programme and agenda in future from today hence? So I'm happy if you want to leave that way.
So this is the quarter four performance monitoring and end of year outturn report. So this is actually the year end situation. We've got so we start with this, there's various corporate performance objectives. So there were at the end of, so if I look at page 15 of your agenda, it sort of gives a little bit of a summary for us. Quarter four, there's 41 activities in the annual business plan which are designed to address the objectives in the corporate plan, and 9 were red and 32 have been regarded as completed, which as we're at the year end is obviously what we would have hoped to do. So there were 13 of those which were the responsibility of the corporate services directorate, and 5 that were red. So we'll go through the red ones, and then in terms of performance indicators, again in the body of the report there was one indicator that was addressed as red, and at quarter four is that corporate performance business plan indicators, quarter four is one at red, and then again key indicators there are 4 at red. So that equates to 4 as red at the year end. So I'm reading on page 16 now. So maybe what if we just
could we ask all members and councillors to join us? Would that be appropriate?
Yeah, if we ask them to join us, then we go through each.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tanzi. I don't know whether you're staying or up to you.
Simon,
it's probably up to you, Mrs. Tanzi. But I think if you're happy to let me deal with the budget scrutiny process, then I think you'll be free to go.
Thank you very much.
So maybe the easiest thing is to go through these actually as they appear in the report, if that's okay. So we've got the relevant officers and lead members here. Would you like to join us, James?
I don't have a specific item.
Oh, you don't have a specific item? Right.
Just
today.
Just
the crowd. Just here's the crowd.
We're that first meeting. We have a crowd.
Chair. So the first...
Yes.
May I make a suggestion? I accept your point about taking things as they are for the time being. But equally, in conscious of time, is it perhaps relevant simply to ask the lead member in question what his or her plans are to turn what's red into something better than red?
I think that's where Mr. Jackson was going, okay. Just to go through that in order.
Yes,
through in order on the reds here.
Yes, sorry, I wasn't going to take it. That's exactly what I was going to do. Okay. So I was going to focus on the red one. So the first one on page 19 is... Listen to and communicate with residents and act on their concerns. So it's around the B. So it's a top row there. B, 90% of complaints not proceeding past stage 1. So that was a very narrow miss. So I don't know what the comments on that.
Yeah. So I'll just offer a couple of comments. So the first thing to note is that point A has been achieved, so it's only point B that causes this to be a red indicator. Now, in terms of point A, I think it's worth noting that there have been a couple of changes to the complaints policy, and the policy has been updated to reflect the review that's taken place, and that's what's detailed there. You've not got the exact details of what's been changed, but in essence, a couple of key changes I think you should be aware of. A complaint must now be made within 12 months of the issues occurring. And for escalation between each stage, this must be received within 3 months of the response to the last complaint. In terms of point A, point B, You can see we've missed the target by 0.53%, which is disappointing, but there's no clear or significant reason that we can draw out from that as to why it's happened. So what Kerry's team is doing is just continuing to monitor that closely and highlight any issues or patterns as and when they arise. Have you got anything else to add?
No, I think so. It's a very small percentage, but exactly as Councillor Rollins has said, we do monitor and look at those. We work closely with the departments in order to make sure that responses that are going out at stage zero or stage one are of quality, address issues that have been raised. So it is disappointing for the teams. They put a lot of hard work in trying to get those complaint responses right. So to miss it by such a small target is frustrating, but in some ways positive that there isn't a clear issue that's mounting up that's meeting that, but it just makes it a little bit more challenging for us to try and achieve that.
I'd just like to dig into this a little bit, because 90% of complaints not proceeding past stage one could be simply a result of us not responding to residents and them getting fed up with the lack of response, couldn't it, in principle?
Potentially. I mean, obviously that's past stage one. We've already got stage zero in front, so potentially
So I'm not sure it should be an indicator, a positive indicator, in the way that we're implying, because it's not necessarily a good thing. What we're assuming is that if we don't have many complaints to the next stage, then that's fine. What we should be looking at is complaints resolved.
So we do look at that as well. So we looked at whether a complaint is upheld or not upheld. We also follow it with satisfaction monitoring on complaints as well. Mm. And as part of the complaint review, we did consultation directly with customers that have been through the process in order to get their feedback. So I take your point. We do look at it as positive that it's been resolved, and that's why it hasn't been escalated to the stage.
I think that would be a far better measure for this project management element than 90% of complaints not proceeding past a particular thing. What we should be looking at is the extent to which our complaints have been resolved to the satisfaction of, and there is a problem here, I was going to say to the satisfaction of the resident, but there is a problem here that that what's to their satisfaction may not actually be to our satisfaction, and where we're being reasonable.
I would suggest it's where we look at whether it's upheld or not upheld or partially upheld that's important, because exactly that, we may have acted in accordance with policy, but it does not mean that the customer is satisfied with the outcome. We may not be able to have changed their satisfaction level if what we've done is accurate, followed due process, etc. So for us, looking at the complaints, it's whether we have acted in accordance with policy that's important, and is the feedback we give back to the services. But there's lots of different ways of considering feedback when it comes to complaints and what is good and what isn't good. In the same way that you might say an increase of complaints is bad, well, actually it might be good because people are choosing to give us feedback on what's happening. It's quite subjective, is really what I'm trying to say. We monitor all of this closely. It all forms part of what we're looking at around customer standards, etc. And we try and make sure that we're learning lessons. So whatever we're doing, we are feeding back into the departments or asking for feedback from them to us so that we can share that.
Okay. Moving on.
So the next one is a long-standing and quite knotty issue. So it's on the top of page 20, ERM5. This actually falls under strategic support, though Mrs. Barton might have a view, but this is around increased levels of customer satisfaction with the web-related service they receive from a baseline of 52%. So 52% was our web satisfaction target measured using GovMetric, and unfortunately we failed to answer that. So again, I don't know if Councillor Rollins has got a view initially.
Limited on this, because this actually does come under the leader's remit, so it's not directly in my portfolio. So other than the fact that I've read the report, I've had some brief comments from our communications manager, and I did look at the percentage. If you break down the percentages of visitors to our website, it would actually, if you read on the report, each negative or average rating, if they were a person, it would equate to 0.39% of our web traffic. So it's flagged up as red. Actually, clearly improvements could be made, but it is a very, very small number of the people who are going onto the website. And also the other thing that I think ought to be made clear is it's very easy for someone to click a negative button on our Good Metrics survey on the website rather than providing feedback face to face. So I think that probably falls into the next one. I'm not sure if you've got anything fairly elsewhere.
I haven't specifically, it's Adrian Ward who comes under, so I haven't discussed this one specifically.
Setting the baseline at 52% seems remarkably low. What's the reason for that?
From my experience, generally you will always find that website satisfaction is significantly lower than you would get over telephone or face-to-face because of the personal interaction. So it would be, I would suggest it would be kind of reasonable to ask for us to have the same sort of standards that we have because of the type of comments that Councillor Holland just made and the feedback. In order to do with the volumes, how easy it is to have negative feedback, the fact that if you're on the phone and so you ask a question, someone can go away, find the information, and they have that time. If they immediately cannot find a piece of information, they may very quickly, because we're very quickly press negative, they may not spend the same amount of time trying to find the information. For example, at the moment we don't have a web chat facility where they could hop on and talk to somebody to retain that sort of customer on the website and support them. So there's a variety of reasons, but Mike from Communications probably is more of an expert than I am in order to give you some feedback in terms of that lower standard.
The only thing I'd add to that is, again, if you've seen on the newly designed website, reasonably newly designed, there is now literally the Good Metric poll that just has happy, sad and kind of moving faces, and that's where the bulk of this data is coming from. So it's not like someone's got to really go to any effort at all to provide proper feedback. It is literally just a click of a button, and as Kerry says, you may well just look at the website, not get the thing you want instantly and click the sad face, and then that's it. That then is one of those hits. I'm not excusing it at all. I think there's always room for improvement, but I think that's probably goes some way to explaining why the baseline is quite so low, because I agree on the face of it, it does seem extraordinarily low.
A 3-point scale for measuring satisfaction is highly unusual. We would normally use 7, certainly in academia. So a three-point scale is bizarre, but
And the opportunity to not leave any feedback, so they can just put, you know, an unhappy face, and all we know is which page they've said it on. We have no reason why they're not happy with what we've done. They can leave a comment, which obviously then can make it very difficult for us to understand why we got the feedback and what improvements we can make. So,
just a couple of points to add to that. So one is our feedback is based on GovMetric, which is the 3 smiley faces, which is arguably a bit simplistic. So there is the question of is that appropriate, and are we asking the right questions when we're looking at our web? And I think there's possibly no. When you do look at GovMetric though, and it does provide a league table every month, I believe it is every month I get one of these. If you look at the leading councils for net satisfaction on customer services and contact centre, of which we're very often in the top 10, you should get a net satisfaction score of 0.95, which sort of to get 0.96, ultimately, because the maths are easy, you've basically got to get 98 positive answers and 2 negative answers out of 100. So those in those areas, the net positive score is always in the 0.9s, whereas web chat, even the best performing councils, usually it's the state of Jersey for whatever reason, but the best performing ones are only at sort of 0.58, 0.599, 0.6, reflecting that generally the feedback from on web is rather lower. And then the other thing which the communications manager has pointed out, and something we were expecting, is that having redesigned the website and improved it generally, that will have created and did indeed create a dip in the middle of the year immediately after the launch of the new website, because habitual users would have come to the new website not being able to find what the page they wanted to in their usual way, and then that would elicit some negative comments as well. So I think we all agree we'd like to do much better on this. I think there's some thinking about what are the best measures, but there are also some issues around how the sort of whole process works and how we can better improve.
Okay, moving on.
So the next one we have is improve the way customers can access our services, and this one really is around piloting web chat and the call recording solution. So this is on page 21, DES 2, so exploring evaluate opportunities to web chat. So
yeah, so there have been delays here, there's no getting around that. That's exactly why it's a red indicator. They are pretty well all caused because of the phone system, and there's a new phone system or an upgrade to the phone system that's coming in fairly soon. We've only been talking about that earlier on this evening, and once the new system's in, it should unlock this issue. And I think Kerry's been appearing before performance scrutiny, as it was before this committee was formed, to explain that fairly regularly, haven't you, as to why delays have happened. But in essence, we weren't able to move to call recording without additional software that blanks out card payment details and things like that for data protection, that sort of stuff. And that's all got to tie in at the same time in order for it to work. As soon as the new phone system comes into force, that will also allow web chats, and then we can start piloting that. And there are conversations going on about that frequently at the moment as to how we expect that to work. So that's predominantly why that's in red, but unless you want to add anything more, Karen.
Well, really, the initial implementation of the telephone system left us with a number of issues in the contact centre, which we've been working with our provider to resolve. So I flagged up early last year that we weren't going to be able to deliver, because the web chat is delivered as part of the phone solution, and the call recording is delivered as part of the phone solution. And as we've mentioned, in order to be the PCI compliant, which is around protecting card data, we certainly can't switch on call recording until we've done that. We've been working with our supplier in order to address those issues. To do that, they're actually offering us an upgraded system, which we're currently in the project planning stage. And as part of that, they will also build our web chat for us and our call recording modules. The first thing that they're working on is the PCI software that we need to put over the top of our phone system to remove those security risks in terms of card payments. and make us compliant. So we are currently having weekly meetings with those for the delivery of that, which is planned over the summer and early autumn, with the web chat pilot and the call recording software all being available at the end of that, and then we will design the pilot for the web chat and then move into the call recording phase. So it is really disappointing on how long it has taken us to get to this stage. It's certainly not through any of the efforts of the officers here. It has been issues that we've had with our software providers in order to get them to the point where we need to. But we are confident now that we're in a position to move forward, and it will be delivery within the timescales this year.
Okay. Next two, Simon, 24 and 25.
So the next one is on page 24. This is around an investment strategy, setting out the council approach to investment decisions. Councillor Barker's not here, so maybe I'll just briefly answer this one. So we presented the council with a capital strategy in the spring of this year. One of the key elements of that strategy potentially could have been, or should have been, the investment strategy, which would set out council's approach or council's appetite for risk, which was something that came out of the peer challenge, and also what our approach and policies would be to investing in assets such as buildings, and whether they would be in or out of the borough, for example, and what level of return we would be seeking to achieve, and matters such as whether we would invest in assets for pure return, or whether we would also want them to have other benefits such as maybe an economic regeneration aspect to them, or supporting jobs and skills in our local community. So there are a number of aspects to this. It was originally envisaged it would be part of the capital strategy. Having had the conversations and informed with the lead member and other cabinet members in early spring, it was concluded that this was something we would better take separately in this current financial year. So this is something that will come to cabinet, I'm hoping, in realistically September or October, once we've takes appropriate sounding. And as mentioned earlier, it is obviously something that this committee may also wish to take an interest in due course.
Okay, next one.
Ready to go on that one?
Yeah. Because it's a customer service programme and giving a mark as milestones.
So with this one, the customer service programme has in essence reached a natural conclusion. Five out of the seven projects have been completed, and two of them for online customer experience and document management have completed milestones, and there is some more work, as you can see in this report, that's going to be done. What the Chief Executive has done and included an objective in the 2019-20 business plan is to establish a transformation programme for the council, and that picks up the issues that haven't been resolved as part of this project. So this does show as a red indicator, but as you'll see, it's been put in the business plan for further progression. The
transformation programme may well be something that this group chooses to look at as a project.
Yeah, and I think it probably would be sensible that you do. And just to give you a bit of a flavour for the commitment of the council, see that I've been asked as part of my lead member role to deal specifically with digital transformation. It's something that we've got a lot of work to do, and that is what the transformation programme is going to really drive, to deliver transformation on a holistic basis for the entire council. So it's being picked up, unless you want anything further. Yeah.
Thank you, appreciate that. We have the business plan and key corporate indicators. I'm cognizant of time, just before I crack through. Members, we won't do this again in this way. We won't be doing this like this again in future. And I know that the Commission is looking at accessing all this data. Yes. We've got to do it tonight to just get through this, but I don't see us doing it like this again.
So, well, if I run through these, so the BP14 on page 28, that's again, that's just a replay of the web-related service, so that's just actually the metric that supports that. The next one is on page 29, so it's KIA 18% of council tax collected, so with Councillor Rollinson.
I can talk about it.
Just a brief point on that.
Yeah, I mean, we have just missed the target, and actually nationally, it's reflected across many of the local authorities. We continue to have a very robust and rigorous process that we go through in order to recover monies. We have also just introduced a new reminder service to try and catch people at an earlier stage before they fall behind. So we will continue to do that work, but often we're finding where we get to the stage enforcement officers, they get there and there's not always anything of any value in order to recover. We also need to make sure, we need to review our charging order process, where we've got a charging order against the property for its sale, to make sure that that's fully robust. We have had some issues where there's been an issue and it's not been registered fully, and then when the property's sold, we haven't been able to get our portion of the money back. So I'm working with legal on that to make sure that is, you know, that there's no sort of loopholes in that at all. But we will continue to plug away. The team are very determined to try and maintain our collection rates, and we'll continue to try and work through those and look for any opportunities that we can to make improvements and identify any risks at an early stage.
Can I just dig into this a little bit? It's interesting because 30% is collected in the first quarter, more or less 30 in the second quarter. Then it goes to 15, and then another 15. But what I'm wondering is, and in that last quarter, we're not collecting the full amount. So I know it's only a bit off, but nevertheless, 10-12%. What's happening in that fourth quarter that's stopping people from paying up?
I haven't got a percentage, but a number of people are going through the recovery process. So what will happen is they'll pay the first month, and then they don't pay, so then we start recovery action, so then they start paying again, and we find ourselves going through, and their arrears build up throughout the year, and so that's why you end up, one of the reasons you end up with the lesser collection at the end of the year. So there is, that is a predominant factor. We have people that are paying obviously 6 monthly in advance, so again people are paying bigger chunks up front. Some people pay the whole amount in the beginning of the year as well, so we have a number of people doing that, which is why you see a skew sometimes in the figures.
And are we providing an incentive to pay upfront in a lump sum.
No. There is no, whether people pay by direct debit or pay by cash or pay all in front, no, there is no incentive in that way.
I mean, it's a thought, but obviously it'd have revenue implications.
Yeah, but no, not at the moment.
Okay. Are we done on that item anymore?
That was the last one on this item.
Is the intention to try and reach 98%? Is that what we're looking for?
Target's there, I think.
97.
Target is 97.8, and we're on 97.52.
Yes. I'd have thought, I know it's a tiny amount, but I'd have thought 98% would be a good thing to make.
It's quite a lot, actually, in terms of getting that collection, considering that we've obviously dropped down by just under 0.3%, to then try and get that 0.5% increase of council tax is quite significant in the current climate. The other thing I didn't mention was around universal credit. People that claim a universal credit don't now automatically claim council tax support. They have to make a completely separate claim through us. So our numbers of people claiming council tax support has also been affected, because unless the DWP refer them or we can grab them, they're missing out on that opportunity. So I agree, I'd like to see us at 98%, and we will strive to make that as high a collection as possible, but we are in challenging times in trying to get that very small amount. We're looking to increase our direct debit collection rate as well, because that's proven that if you have a higher direct debit collection rate, you have a higher collection rate as well.
Does that mean that we, I presume this is not the case, but of that 2.5%, what proportion is bad debt?
What do you mean by when you make...
Well, that we'll never get back, that somebody's just not going to pay up.
I don't have that
figure. I mean, they end up in court, of course, but what happens if they really don't pay ever at all?
We write it off.
Yeah, so what proportion of that 2.5% is bad debt?
I don't know off the top of my head. I would have to come back to you with that information.
Because we never... The reason I ask is because we're never going to get 100%.
No. It is reported, I just can't remember where.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that collection rate is the highlight, is a sort of a standard metric, actually, which is the in-year collection rate. Now, obviously, the 2.5% we don't collect, we will obviously strive to collect the following year. And actually, inevitably, some of the collection of the payment that we've had in-year will relate to the previous year. So it's, and then actually writing it off is in some ways an administrative process. It's, you know, if someone paid, the fact that we've written something off doesn't mean we wouldn't like to recover that if we can, and the fact we don't write something off doesn't mean that we're actually ever going to ultimately recover
it. Is a figure we see. We do get it reported as a cash figure at some point. I've seen that in our journeys, it will appear. Thank you very much, Carol.
I've completely didn't give you the very obvious answer for why the percentage collection rate is lower in the last quarter.
Yeah.
And that's because direct debits are only 10 months, generally. So that's why there's a lower amount coming in over those last 2 months. Apologies.
Notwithstanding earlier comments, are we prepared to consider 98% as a target?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to... That's what I was trying to get to.
We have already set the target for this.
I'm not sure that's in our remit tonight to change the target, because... if we were to do that, personally, I'd want to understand why it's 98%, not 98.1 or 97.9, or the evidence behind why we set it at a particular rate. So I don't think that's necessary in our remit tonight, to sit and just change a target randomly without evidence as to why and a background. So I think, thank you very much, Mrs. Barnshaw. Thank you very much, Councillor Roy.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time and patience tonight. Thank you for attending. Members, back to item 8 now, if we can. And this warrants some thought and some discussion from all of you, and I know time is pressing on. With regard to this issue, if I could just lay a tiny bit of background before asking Mr. Jackson and Mrs. Strong to comment, or Mrs. Strong at an appropriate point to comment. So the budget process has... I have sat on budget scrutiny for the last... certainly 3 years, I think. I don't think I sat there first year, but I think I might have, so 3 or 4 years. The process takes place a number of meetings, and at times I have expressed dissatisfaction, particularly at the beginning of the process, where the opening meeting, the set of figures we have been presented with, have not come completely contextualised. The questions we've asked, because under the old system, lead members were not There was little expectation, I think, for lead members to appear, certainly at the first meeting and sometimes the second. So we'd ask a question of officers and they wouldn't be able to respond because it was a political question about the context in which a decision was made over that. £1 million here, not £1 million there. So it was a very difficult process and not necessarily satisfactory. We also have a timetable whereby some quite key decisions, which we largely got correct in my experience, were not decided until Christmas New Year time. So we could say what we liked really in the run up to that. A decision in New Year could potentially have changed all of that, and we would have, I think, wasted time, but it was not necessarily the most productive use of our time. So there is an opportunity now within this committee, because the budget falls under our responsibility. The Commission has already passed that responsibility to us as to how we do it. I will express one view now and then ask Mr. Jackson to comment, and then I think also Mrs. Strong will have an observation as well around that. The budget scrutiny process has taken place over the last 4 years in isolation on its own with a group of people very firmly focused on it, so that it's not lost in some other committee. We don't get to 7:40 and now the budget comes up and we only spend 20 minutes of it. We've done it as a dedicated team of people working on the budget. I am keen for that process to continue. I might have some very different views on how we constitute that group, and that's where I know Mrs. Strong will comment on what we're allowed to do, but I would be keen that we don't say we're going to do it in here in our three quarterly meetings between now and the end. I would rather we go away tonight having given the chair and vice chair, with the other explanation you're going to hear, the opportunity to go away and set up a budget scrutiny panel group subcommittee, we'll come to that in a moment, to be dedicated to it. The budget warrants dedicated attention and dedicated learning. It's not just about doing the job. There is a learning process to go through. I speak with hard-won experience of having to learn the process over 3 or 4 years and get to grips with the figures, the scale of the council's money, where it is loosely, what the key headings and numbers are, then the detail. So that's where I'd like to go tonight, but it is in your gift tonight to decide where we go. Having said all that, I'd like Mr. Jackson, if he would, to give a rounding and introduction on that, and then there's a point with regard to what we can and can't do and what that constitutes.
So how you want to, whether it's this group or another group, from me I'm neutral about it. That's actually for members. The only thing I would talk about are the timings, because the budget runs to essentially a very strict timing, so it all has to be at council. So it's a legal requirement we set the budget that has to be at council, and the latest we can do that is the end of February, and the reason for that is connected with the direct debits actually from council tax, it takes 2 weeks to prepare the billing documentation, and then they have to go out to the general public 14 days before the 1st of April to comply with direct debit legislation. That is, so the budget runs to a very strict timetable. So the final budget goes to cabinet in earlier in February, and the draft budget goes to council in December. So what we like to do is to get most of the budget detail in place and correct for the draft budget in December. So if we're moving numbers around and doing lots of alteration between December and the middle of February, which didn't happen in the latest budget round, but it did happen the year before, that's not really that satisfactory. From a scrutiny point of view, actually, it doesn't enable the scrutiny group to look at things in maybe the way they would.
And under that system, if I'm right, we've met under the old system 3 times before December.
That's three or four meetings. So there's, I suppose, the four stages. So the four stages I would outline are: one is the first stage of the first things to consider, which could be around now, is to look at the outturn. So the committee's considered the outturn tonight. So one of the sort of, and again, to maybe look at the outturn in the context of the future budget. So a couple of things that may come out of tonight is, one, from a general fund and HRA perspective, both of those are overspent, underspent and quite significantly in the year. And then within the detail, there are some things that maybe the committee would like to keep an eye on and have some a particular look at, and particularly understand what the budget proposals are for those areas. So we've spoken about planning. If I were to look at the report that was in item six again, there's quite a lot of underspend related to the private sector housing area. So what's happening there? There's also within the report, and this is a challenge in terms of how we present it, there are some ups and downs. So there are, so for example, I won't go through all of these, but in the head of customer experience, which is the one of my particular areas, the housing rent allowance, which is basically the amount the government gives us to administer the housing benefit system, that's always difficult and something they don't actually tell us about until we get the final sort of reckoning in March. But that was £300,000 less than we thought it was going to be, so that's actually very significant. Fortunately, there were other things going the way which offset that and didn't make that look so significant in the headline figures. But there are things in there which are highlighted in this report which you may want to look at. There's also in the early areas, a discussion about what the medium-term financial strategy is and what we think is important and how we go about compiling that report. And that's sort of the initial context, and that sort of can happen around about now. The next stage that we've looked at, which is a meeting in September, so there is indeed a meeting of this committee in September, so the timing would work depending how you want to do it, is to look at the draft medium-term financial strategy. And just briefly, that's what that does is it takes our existing budget and it sort of rolls that forward, adjusting for sort of known increases or decreases in expenditure that we would understand. It also takes our estimates of what our government funding or what our total funding is going to be for the ensuing years, which is a mix of council tax but also retained business rates and our view on new homes bonus.
It's kind of how the first year fits into 4 years.
Yes, and then we roll that forward. So that then that so it is a bit of a black art, and increasingly so. But nonetheless, as a committee, you're perfectly entitled to question our assumptions on council tax increases, on things like inflation, staff pay rises, and the views of what we think is going to happen on new homes bonus or retained business rates going forward. So that is, I won't spoil the fun, but that's an increasingly complicated message. And actually, if any of you are coming to the financial awareness training tomorrow, there's an opportunity to have a little bit more of a discussion on that. So that would be the sort of report we would be able to discuss in the second meeting. And also at that point we should have identified a funding gap, and that would be the opportunity to talk to the lead member about what we think the approach is in terms of setting the budget going forward. So that would cover things like use of reserves, what we have in the pipeline in terms of efficiencies, is the shape of the council the correct shape of the council? So what we've historically done is sought to maintain frontline services in exactly the same configuration that we have now, but that's what we've done. Maybe there's an argument for spending more in some areas and less in the others, but that's the sort of approach that would be appropriate to discuss with the lead member then. And then going into December, what we did last year was look into the detail of the draft report. The draft budget report will set out service savings and pressures, and what that means is, and savings could be also increased income. So that would be the opportunity to challenge the relevant lead members and heads of service about savings and what would the impact be on their service, and actually does the budget reflect the opportunities and risks properly? Are we actually, if we're putting down that we're going to increase income, how realistic is that? So again, going back to the planning example might be an example, or if we are requiring additional spend in a service area, what's the justification for that? And and etc. So that's the that will be the December meeting, and I think the timing of that is the timing of that this year. So the draft cabinet report should be available from the 29th of November. So there's actually a so this is where the timings are quite difficult. There's a relatively small time.
The crux of it, as you can see, there is a long and detailed process, which I would not be keen to lose as item 7 on the agenda on a late November evening or December evening. And the process accelerates, and the need for the process to accelerate from Christmas onwards and be more precise is compelling at that point, whereas from now until December, whilst there is a timetable of activities that Simon is outlining, it's I don't say it's leisurely from that perspective, but it accelerates from the Christmas period onwards, where key things have to get to Cabinet. I think that would be fair to say.
Yeah, and a lot of the work from an officer point of view is actually starts.
Yeah.
It starts pretty much now with looking at our base budget. So the next, so we're actually undertaking work now to try and understand and assess what, for example, our business rates are going forward. And then when we get into the autumn period, there's a quite an intense month or so of work when the finance team coordinate the exercise of getting each head of service and each service area to come in with what their view of the future is. Then there is some horse trading amongst sort of officers and lead members as we then get into
such. So my simple request of you tonight is to agree the way forward for us to do the budget process of scrutiny. You are within your rights to say let's keep it in this meeting. I'm not clear that we would get the attention it deserves unless we were here till 10 o'clock for the time it takes. My view is I would like to see it taken outside and a group set up. Now the implications of that are that the two methods we have, which Laura will, okay, Mrs. Strong will comment on, we are able to do it as a scrutiny panel. Which means myself and the vice chair are in a position to chair that group, and we are able to go out to our fellow councillors to constitute that group. That's kind of how it's worked in the past. An email has gone out in the past saying who wants to sit on budget scrutiny, and people volunteer. 4 years ago, I think there was a waiting list. Last year, everyone who asked was on it, and I wouldn't necessarily say it was competence based in terms of the people, and that's no reflection on the people. It's hard to find competence-based people that can look at the accounts and do the job that's necessary. If we do it as a subcommittee, it can only be a subgroup of this group in here, so we don't get to pull on the wider pool of expertise amongst our colleagues, and I don't know what that pool is like this year. I don't know all the newly elected members, so we have that within our gift in here tonight to make one of those three choices. I don't know if you want to highlight any of the other.
Yeah, so that's absolutely, that's correct in how you summarised it. So a subcommittee.
Didn't you say a subcommittee could also draw on chairs and vice chairs of other committees?
No, we'll start with the scrutiny panel. So if you chose to go down the route of a scrutiny panel, that would usually be a decision of scrutiny commission. You'd have to ask them to set that up. But scrutiny commission have already expressed, having discussed it at their first meeting, or expressed a willingness for the committee to decide if it'd like to do it that way. If you do decide to set up a scrutiny panel, then we'll have to follow the rules in the constitution about a scrutiny panel. And that will, they basically are summed up by it must be chaired by a chair or vice chair of either scrutiny commission or any of the other three scrutiny committees. Well, you would meet that if you chaired that. Yeah. The other guidance in the constitution is that the opportunity to be on a scrutiny panel should be opened up to all scrutiny councillors. And the way that's normally done is by an email who would like to take part, expressions of interest. And then the membership of that panel would actually be decided by the head of strategic support if it was too many people to be reasonable. Now, there would be nothing to prevent in setting a panel and saying in that email, we would like councillors to volunteer, particularly if, for example, they have attended the financial awareness training. So that would be reasonable to say when we asked councillors to volunteer. There'd be nothing to prevent other councillors from asking
but,
to take
but
part.
But it is within our remit to work with the person selecting the group to ensure we get the
yes,
best possible
absolutely.
Group to do the job.
Yeah. A subcommittee is more limited because that is, and you can do that yourself without any permission from the Scrutiny Commission, but that would be a smaller group of people taken from the membership here.
Well, would the panel be politically balanced?
Scrutiny panels were not normally right. politically balanced.
Neither was budget scrutiny, although it was chaired by, we used to volunteer the chair to the leader of the opposition group for the old-fashioned budget scrutiny panel, but it's not, it wasn't necessarily, it was whoever volunteered was on it, pretty much.
I mean, could it not simply be done by more meetings of this committee just focused on budget scrutiny?
I guess that's an option if that's what this committee wanted. If this committee wanted to do a separate sequence of meetings with all of this committee involved, I guess that's an option. It's just like a subcommittee that's everybody.
Yeah,
so it would have that opportunity were it to choose it.
I wouldn't want that.
I think that we need to I must admit I didn't realise this committee was going to be so financially
well it has been tonight. I'm not sure it will always look this way.
I think personally with the budget it should be people on it who know what they're talking about and accounts and money.
I'll go along with that. I'm not an accountant so I don't profess to
it's still reported back in here and to the Commission.
Yeah, I'm quite happy for it to come back.
If I chaired both, for example, I would be ensuring the work of the Budget Scrutiny Committee found its way, or the panel found its way back in here.
Yeah.
I guess the Constitution finally says it goes back to our Chair of the Commission at some point.
I think possibly as it falls within the remit of this committee, Budget Scrutiny, then
you
could report direct to Cabinet when you got to the end of your process. So.
Okay. I think out of courtesy we'd probably look to to go back to
Is that something we need to check? Historically you're quite correct.
Went back
to go through
SNB as was.
Yeah,
so what's our view? I'm keen to make a decision. I'm keen not to continue to prolong. We have one more item on the agenda, the work programme, which I think will be relatively short, given your good will.
My view is that we have a separate panel and we invite people who know what they're talking about.
Do you empower the chair and vice chair along with officers to do that?
Yes.
Is that what you would be asking myself and
council? It doesn't stop Richard going on it, because Richard knows.
I'd be delighted to have Richard
on
it if you volunteered.
But I think then it'll give us a second chance of having a bite at the cherry, won't it, when it comes?
I think it's the dedicated time and my own personal experience. I don't claim to be any smarter or not smarter than anybody else. It takes time to get one's head around the budget.
And the more time you spend with it,
the better you get at looking at it and being able to ask questions. And it would be, I would hope that we could provide some learning as well as the actual process in amongst it. So just understanding the pots and the reserves, the framework, just being able to do a more thorough job, I think deserves the attention of a group dedicated to it, but still linked back into this group. I don't wish to take it away from you in any way.
Just thinking about the work programme for that subcommittee or panel, which is what it's becoming by the sounds of it. There'd be the medium-term financial strategy, there'd be the outturn position once a year. What else would there need? Would there be quarterly reviews as well, I presume, of the budget?
There are regular monitoring reports. They're not quite quarterly, so we tend to backload them. So certainly at the beginning of the year, there's some carry forward or accruals and prepayments tend to roll forward, which can make the numbers look obscure. So we tend to, I think we do the first monitoring report in July. So I think we do July, October, and January. There's no rules
about
that.
So there need to be three meetings of this.
Well, the monitoring runs separately. The monitoring runs via reporting back to here. The job of the budget scrutiny panel is in the scrutiny of the creation of the next annual budget, and it's fit into the MTFS. So that's the panel's job. Our job still remains to monitor that.
So how many meetings of the panel do you think need to occur to tackle that work programme of the budget?
I think probably 3/4, I think the tone of the meetings might need to be different. It's one of the things I would be encouraging. But I think it's a 3/4 meeting. I think it was 5 previously to get through the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing which is historically always tricky is sort of feedback or consultation on the Loughborough special expense area. So I think that will be... I think last year we did three, but then the Loughborough special expenses meet separately. I think there's the Loughborough area committee, so I would... I'm envisaging, and in fact I think it is in their agenda, I think a review of the draft budget is in their work programme for December, actually, if I recall from looking at the relative agenda.
It's probably not bad timing.
That does work. I did actually check that. That does actually work, so it allows them to review the Loughborough area elements of the budget and feed that into this process, assuming the scrutiny panel or the subcommittee or whatever we conclude the scrutiny panel meets in January to consider the budget in a holistic way.
So going back, is this committee happy if I just summarise where I think we are, that the chair and vice chair are empowered to go from here to work up the budget scrutiny process, given that our thoughts are it should be a panel, which then we go out more widely to our council colleagues, but we have the power to be a little selective. I wouldn't wish to exclude people who are keen, because everyone has to learn.
Yeah.
Everybody has to learn at some point. The budget process is key, that the majority of people on there play a role, because I think it's a lot for one individual to just be a single person trying to do it with the support and nodding heads of others. At the other end of that, we probably don't have 7 accountants sitting in the council right now on the council side who are experts on council finances. In there we have to find a balance where I would hope we can get a group of people who are fairly consistent. I think, as experience tells myself and Jewel, we're the only two people who sat on the budget scrutiny committee for 4 years in a row. I think we were the only two people who were constant in that, and I'd like to get a little more if we're able to. And I'm delighted to have one or two people choose to learn, and there's other things in the whole scrutiny process about shadowing and developing others. It's not the best development opportunity, but I'd like someone who's maybe wants to do it, and we can bring on board as part of that process. And there's 6 or 7 of us, and 2 or 3 people are coming along for future years. So is the panel prepared to take me, to allow myself and the vice chair to take that forward relatively quickly? Because I think we need to set the time frames quickly now for putting it in
arranging. Well, Mrs. Strong will confirm, but I think getting meetings in diaries is always challenging. So the longer we have to do that, the better.
It's kind of now. So Councillor.
Based on experience, is there a view of a sort of good minimum, maximum number of members on this panel?
There is a max. I can't remember the maximum off the top of my head. There is a maximum number of scrutiny panels that we try to work to, but I'm not sure if there's a minimum.
We were only five last year.
I don't necessarily need 5 or 6.
Well,
if you've got 6, then you know you're going to probably get 5 coming along.
Are you comfortable with that panel?
Yes.
Is that okay with everybody?
Can I just ask, Chair, that what is really helpful at this stage, because it's going to be a scrutiny panel, is if you are proposing that yourself chair the panel, that's really helpful, because when we do the processes afterwards, it's helpful to know who the chair is going to be.
Would you be comfortable in asking me to chair that panel?
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Is that
okay? Yes, thank you. Yeah, it just helps. Yes. But yeah, because normally when we set a scrutiny panel, we would appoint the chair, so it just means it's been formally...
And can you carry, without wishing to be political, please do carry back to your colleagues that I'm keen to have the best expertise across all parts parts of our chamber. It goes out to everybody.
Under our constitution, if I could ask Mrs. Strong through you, does the commission still have formally to agree that the Councillor Parsons chairs?
I think possibly not, because the minutes of the constitution suggest they were happy for a panel to be set up for this purpose. So normally we'd have to go to the commission and say you'd like a panel setting up, and the commission would set the
chair. We did it
chair,
at the last meeting.
It meets the requirements of the constitution in terms of Councillor Parsons being the chair of the scrutiny committee. So,
okay, so
I think that will be
one
fine.
Less bit of
we will report. We'll get reported back. Yeah,
bit of stuff to organise.
We're together in 2 days' time to start that process, to start the timing process. So thank you very much for that. Are we comfortable? That's have you got enough in your notes and minutes there?
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate what we're doing. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for your support on that matter. I do think it's the right way that we have a dedicated group on it. Work programme. I expressed a view earlier on about the work programme. We can go through it. The tradition has been to go through the work programme item by item, bring new items to the work programme. There are some things we probably have to do there. I can't say I'm completely aware of exactly which ones we have to do. Mr. Jackson might tell me all of them. But what I'm really after is for this group to say, go away, Chair and Vice Chair, come back to us, communicate with us over the next 3 months, and come back with a piece of work for an agenda item for a complete reworking of how we set, put forward and prepare our work programme for this committee. My guess is we won't be right first time, because I think we're all learning under the new structure, and this group can refine that. We will try some things that might go wrong, but I would ask this committee to consider that, because this is the old way.
I'm happy with all suggestions.
I think I'd take a little bit of guidance from you, Mr. Jackson, just to make sure that we can leave this sitting there as it is now, and we've not missed anything, and the things will come forward at the next meeting, because that's what we've done. But actually to be working with you and others where relevant, to get our work programme as we would wish it to be more efficient, effective, perhaps focused in different ways, and over time developing maybe a public angle, an expert angle, just to start to really be effective in this space. It will mean some time with you and perhaps some of your colleagues, and again, I'm aware of the pressures on the vice chair, and I might ask if other members can accompany me. I don't wish to be a single man band on this, so I like to be accompanied by other members of this panel. So if I know the vice chair can't make it, I hope panel members won't mind if I pop out an email inviting somebody to come along, because I'd welcome the I'd welcome having not just me in the room, to be quite frank, and the expertise that all of our councillors bring to this. So I know Councillor Baines is busy as I am, but in making the time, I hope we can call upon all of you to be in the room to make sure we stay true to what we're trying to achieve.
And maybe if I could add to Councillor Radford's comment, there is a lot of stuff around finance, and clearly that Section 151 officer, I would think that's important, but the directorate does cover a lot of other aspects as well, and I think it's important that we do reflect a look at some of those as well.
I panicked when I saw all the finance. I thought I'm only any good at looking after my housekeeping.
Well, that's
very good. That's a starting point.
That's not negative.
This is team with approval of that.
So again, can I ask you, just given your view of this, we're looking at the items that are down here for September, really, is the focus. Presumably it would be prudent of us to cover these off in some way in September, whilst integrating them into what will be hopefully an improved, new, shiny, wonderful start our work program.
Chairman, can I suggest, because a lot of us are new to this, is that we leave what's down here, that you and the chair, vice chairman talk to Simon, if I can call you Simon, and if they don't really think that they're relevant or important, then knock them off, or if you think something else wants going in, rather than
I think that's very much our hope, but I just don't want to make sure that what's there is covered. I know that I think the commission, I know we've got Councillor Hunt here, but I know the commission are working with the council officers to potentially make available the whole of the performance criteria so that we can all see it. That might negate and reduce the amount of work we have to do on item one, the budget scrutiny we've taken outside. So it seems to me we can cover off the three items that are here listed for September.
And others.
And we should then be working up our own beginnings of the programme in September, which might then affect the December ones, and on we go to make this sharper, more efficient and do some of the things I'd like to aspire to, that we might get wrong. And I make no bones, I'm not perfect, we might make mistakes. But if you're happy to bear with us,
we'll
try and drive a better quality agenda.
Yeah, this is a new, fresh start to scrutiny, and sure. Yeah.
Is again that okay with yourself? We're not going to lose anything from these three items.
I think there are questions around. Well, we'll talk in a couple of days' time, and this, you know, maybe a view that some of the outturn matters that we've got for September could be part for the budget scrutiny panel. But we'll discuss that in a couple of days' time and see what we think.
And have you got wording that's clear?
Yes, I think so.
That you can
mean
it appropriately.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think that probably concludes the official part of the meeting.